I'm Chris Preston.
And I'm Brad Zimmerman.
And welcome to Street Check, the best podcast in the half century plus history of Cabot Wealth Network. Brad, Tesla, Elon Musk, they're offering, it was just announced, 1 month trials, self-driving trials for people who have Teslas who have that have self-driving capability. Does this reek of desperation to you from Musk and company?
I don't know. I mean, it fundamentally seems like a good promo from a business standpoint, right? Like, you don't have to roll out new hardware to anybody. All you have to do is flip a software switch and let everybody try full self-driving. And then if they love it, they spend $2,000 or $4,000 or whatever it costs to add it. Like, it doesn't seem like a bad promo, but it does seem out of character. So there's a little stink of desperation there, I think.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of an equivalent. You know, I don't know if we would have seen this from Tesla if they weren't coming off two disappointing quarters. You know, I would maybe if Musk could, you know, take his own promo and let someone else take the wheels of Tesla for a while, that might help. But yeah, can you think of any equivalent, whether from a big company?
You know, honestly, it just is not out of it's not out of character for a promotion. I don't think that it gets to the level of being problematic that they're saying, hey, all these vehicles that are on the road are already capable of doing this. And before we had the luxury of being able to charge you whatever we wanted because the demand was there and the hype was there. And now it's like we have to prove the value of paying for this tool. So it doesn't, I don't know. Burger King gave out free Whoppers after Wendy's announced that they were going to do some sort of surge pricing. I mean, like, we're not complaining or we're not debating the merits of Burger King or QSR, I guess is the analog for Burger King stock. Right. Like it's a corporate promo. It seems relatively well thought out. I don't know. I'm more concerned about like the big picture trends, right? Electrification is still happening, but now companies have to earn it.
Yep.
You know, the big three, they're losing $5,000, $6,000 per EV that they sell. Tesla has spent a long time making money off carbon offset credits, and now they have to compete, and they have to compete on the merits. So this is their sort of foray into that. And it's refreshing that they are taking that perspective of acknowledging the need to compete and being unable to coast on just the Tesla brand. So I think it's a smart management move. It's not too stinky to me. It's not too much desperation there.
Yeah, no, I get. Yeah, you're right. It might just be an acknowledgement that, you know, there's real competition now for the first time, you know, sort of for the first time in their history. So we've seen with, you know, BYD and others. But let's move on. What's our rundown for today?
So today we are going to start off talking about the S&P. It's a 5 month winning streak. Cannabis stocks have been rallying of late. The dam does seem to have broken to some degree there. And then we're going to talk about Reddit and DJT. So RDDT and DJT being Truth Social. Are we seeing a return of sort of meme stock behavior? After that, we're going to have Mike Santolo from Cabot Growth Investor and Cabot Top 10 Trader on. But then before we get there, we are going to do what we always do, which is our Defend the Take segment. And Chris, you are up this week. Your take: the Fed will only cut rates twice this year, but it won't hurt the markets. You have 90 seconds. You may begin.
Yeah. So, I mean, while last week Jerome Powell did reiterate three more rate cuts this year, it wasn't exactly emphatic. In fact, I think you were slacking with me saying it seemed like from the dot plot, it looked like it was going to be two more, you know, but the end of the calendar year is a pretty arbitrary measuring stick, right? I mean, I could see them doing a third rate cut in January or February. I guess my thinking is I think they're going to start later than people think because of how stubborn inflation has been, right in that low 3% range. You know, this could be undercut by we're recording Thursday instead of Friday. This could be undercut tomorrow when the PCE number that comes out tomorrow, which is the sort of the key inflation gauge that the Fed uses. It's a market holiday tomorrow, but the number comes out nonetheless. Right now, the CME FedWatch tool still thinks that rate cuts will begin. The first rate cut will come in June, 55% chance of a 25 basis point cut. And it thinks by year's end, the most likely scenario is 3 rate cuts, 34%. But, you know, not far behind that is 2 rate cuts at 25%. I'm going with 2 rate cuts. And I don't think the market is going to throw a hissy fit about it. You know, I think if the cuts got pushed back to like November, December, that might, but I see it happening maybe more like late summer starting and them doing sort of a slow play.
All right. Gave you a little bit more time there, but you know, Waller came out last night, I believe, after the close, one of the Fed members saying that there's really no hurry. I do think it's a good, the point is well taken that that us looking at it from a calendar year standpoint is pretty arbitrary. Did you say that the CME FedWatch is calling for a 55% chance of
Yeah, in June. That's down from 60%, like literally yesterday, this morning.
I think it's down from 60% 45 minutes ago. When
yes, I think, I think it is. Right? Yeah.
So I mean, the PCE number tomorrow, that I'm a little bit concerned about. Just because the market's not trading, right? So you could wake up to a negative surprise Monday and there's nothing you can do about it. And with this being such a sentiment-driven market right now, you know, it's I'm more in the bear camp than you are, but it's I don't think it takes a big domino to start a downward reaction, even if it just leads to a correction. I'm frequently wrong though, so take that with a grain of salt. And, you know, maybe that's a good transition to our S&P 5-month winning streak conversation.
Yeah,
because there's a few notes that I pulled from Sentiment Trader and from Ryan Detrick, who is a good Twitter follow that I know a lot of analysts watch. So, you know, do you want to get into that?
Yeah. We're about to close. Today is the last day of the trading day of the quarter and trading day of March. And it is now, we're now officially 5 straight months of the S&P being up. It's the 30th 5-month streak in the S&P since 1950. And it's in all but 2, you know, hopefully I'm not stepping on the Ryan Detrick numbers. I think this comes from Carson Research Group. The average 12-month gain after a 5-month winning streak is 12.5%, whereas the usual 12-month average for the S&P is 9%. There's been 28 in the 28 previous cases where the market has been up 5 months in a row. In the 29 previous cases, 28 of them, the market has been higher a year later. You know, this is a bull markets don't run, you know, don't die of old age, as you know, the saying goes. Maybe that's a Cabot saying, I don't know. So if anything, this is bullish, but you know, this bullish moves beget more bullish moves, you know, until it reaches a point, until we, you know, get too frothy here. But I think those are encouraging numbers where, you know, you shouldn't start selling things just because the S&P is up 5 months in a row.
So the Ryan Detrick, Detrick, at Ryan Detrick on Twitter, the comment that I was alluding to that I wanted to share, the S&P 500 is higher 17 of the past 21 weeks, and it's up 27% during this period. Checks notes, this has never happened before in history. Hopefully you've enjoyed this historic run. I don't think he's saying you've enjoyed it as in it's coming to an end. I think it's like, hey, this is uncharted territory. Hopefully it's been good for you. That was on March 24th. At the same time, Sentiment Trader said we were above a 50 RSI for 100 days running on the S&P 500. It's the ninth time it's happened in history, and it is the sixth longest, with the criteria being that it has to go for at least 80 days. So this is the sixth longest. I don't know. I like Bruce Kazer of Cabot Value Investor. it was always a little bit of a wet blanket when it came to looking at, and I say that with the greatest fondness, when it came to looking at some of these, hey, if you look back in history, the last six times this has happened, it's led to bullish things. Just he was always a critic of the sample size being small. Mm-hmm. And with Detrick calling out, this has never happened before in history, sentiment trader saying, well, you know, since World War II, it's happened nine times. The takeaways there are tough. It very much feels like a sentiment and momentum driven market more than a fundamentals driven market, although we are definitely seeing it broaden out into small caps, which I know we've talked about a lot. Retail's been a huge beneficiary lately, and you're seeing like real economy stuff start to pop. I know copper was doing quite well. Oil stocks have been doing pretty well in the last month or so. So it's just the bear in me just cannot get past the, hey, we're in uncharted territory, right? Like I'm probably overreacting to the wall of worry there, but bull markets don't die of old age, but at some point they die. It can't go up forever. And the amount of momentum that's driving this market does have me, it has me in the same boat that I've been in for a while, which is like, hey, if you've enjoyed this great run up and you've been doing really well, look for opportunities to take risk off the table, whether that's rotating out of the tech stocks. And we've seen that with ETF flows, right? You look at Nvidia, it's like flat for the last month. We've seen the AI and the tech names sort of settle down, which is good. Like that's exactly what should happen if the bull market is broadening out and it's going to continue, is everything keeps going. Everything is measured by the major indices keep going higher, but pockets of it slow down and then other pockets pick up the slack. So we're continuing to see those kind of things happening, which is great, but it can't help but cause my anxiety to run up a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we're going to see another 25% run up in the S&P like we've seen over the last 5 months. Maybe not even, and probably not even in the next 12 months. The numbers I just read averages 12.5% after a 5 month winning streak. But I do think they'll be up. And, you know, think about it. 5 months ago, you talk about markets can sort of die of, bull markets do die of old age eventually. When we sat here 5 months ago at the end of October, things were about as grim as they'd been, you know, maybe aside from, you know, various points in 2022, the market was had just come off a low in October. It seemed like it was really a false bull market or a false rally. The first half plus of 2023, where it was literally just the Magnificent Seven and, you know, maybe a month or two of AI stocks driving things. And now 5 months later, it seems, you know, completely flipped the script, but it's still just 5 months later. You know, I think there needs to be see more frothiness. If we were about to peak. And actually, why don't we flip order of numbers two and three and big three? Why don't we move on to the meme stock conversation, because it ties in well with this. Meme stocks, you know, not the old memes, the old school, the OG meme stocks of GameStop, AMC, was it Best Buy? Is that one?
Bed Bath & Beyond. Palantir was one that never really got a ton of traction, but it was a popular pick among the Wall Street Bets crowd. They were just 2 years or 3 years at this point early.
Yeah. So those aren't frothy now, but there may be some new meme stocks. Reddit, which is where Wall Street Bets exists, where all the conversations about meme stocks or the meme stock movement takes place. IPO'd earlier this week. And then the aforementioned Truth Social, the Trump stock, DJT, is that right? DJT.
Yes. Yeah, it's great. It's the second time a Trump-led company has traded under that ticker symbol. Right. So that went via SPAC. It was previously DWAC, and the ticker change was a big driver of share momentum. So Reddit IPO'd at 34 a share. It initiated trading the same day at 47, closed that day at 50.44. So, you know, obviously good showing from the IPO, probably underpriced a little bit. Subsequently, it pretty much traded flat to down for a couple of days until options kicked in. Once options kicked in, it ran up to a high of 74.90. As of right now, let's see. It is trading at 52.30. It's down about 10% on the day. So it's back to sort of its post-IPO range. DJT, that one, that was trading around 30 or 40 a share until the ticker symbol change. Currently trading at 63.69. It's up 44% in the last 5 days, down 4% today. I have been looking at the Wall Street's bets message board, which was where the meme stock craze sort of took off. These were both popular targets for trading there. But my takeaway from it is it's not like GameStop was in 2021. These just seem to be sort of normal market movement hype events, right? Like an IPO can be very volatile, whether or not it's a meme stock.
Yep.
The ticker symbol change is meaningless from a fundamental standpoint, but it's a potential catalyst, right? There are plenty of people out there that might not be interested in trading DWAC, the SPAC company, Digital World Acquisition Corp. But once it's Trump Media and Technology Group, okay, well, then it attracts some investors. From a valuation standpoint, DJT is definitely the higher valued of the companies insofar as they have 5 million daily active users. So when I say higher, I mean more overvalued. Trading with a market cap of just under $9 billion right now. Company lost $49 million in the last 9 months. Reddit, which has a comparable market cap right now, has 52 million daily active users. So it's got 10 times the reach of Truth Social. It's also a money loser. It has been perpetually, which, I mean, tech companies tend to do that, right? You lose money until you get big enough that you can start making money. We saw the same thing with Meta. It doesn't feel like the frothy, hypermanic meme stock craze of a few years ago. And we saw that with GameStop, which was the OG meme stock, as you put it, that ran up a little bit ahead of earnings. It traded from 13 up to 15.50 a share. And after the earnings came out, the market responded in sort of a reasonable way. Shares are down 18% since then, trading at 12.69 right now. So the market's response to the earnings reaction was not a momentum response. It was a response to the fundamentals. Yeah. So I don't think we're totally in the meme stock zone, but I like the broader market. It's giving me sort of sentiment and momentum driven vibes more than fundamentals or valuation.
Yeah, I think it's a bit apples to oranges. The only overlap is the fact that Reddit, which is the home of Wall Street's bets, is the one that is the company, one of the companies that came public. You know, I think, and then, you know, there's other motivations. Truth Social, Trump's company, has other motivations that may not have to do with a cash injection for, you know, as to with the presidential election on the horizon. It doesn't feel frothy to me. If those original meme stocks or others were way out over their skis the way they were 3 years ago around this time, that might signal some frothiness. But, you know, especially combine that with the AI sort of pause in the last few weeks, not seeing a ton of frothiness. We'll talk more about, you know, market when Mike comes on, but that's my take. Let's move on to speaking of stocks that are getting a big bump, cannabis stocks. You know, this is the sector that cried wolf. There's been many fits and starts over the last 3 years, but, you know, none of them have really stuck. I mean, they peaked. So looking at the MJ ETF, which is a good proxy for the sector, peaked around 25 right around the peak of the meme stock craze, February 2021, dipped as low as, it was a slow death march, really, dipped as low as $3 last August, below $3, actually, just below $3. And then we started to see signs of life from the sector. And it wasn't just buying, you know, bargain basement prices. It wasn't, you know, based on nothing. As we talked about here, when we've had Michael Brush on, who runs our Cabot Cannabis Investor Advisory, there's a lot of potential catalysts out there. Number one is rescheduling, which has been recommended by the FDA and HHS that passed it along to the DEA, Drug Enforcement Administration, to reschedule cannabis from a Schedule 1 to a Schedule 3 drug, which would, you know, i.e. less harmful drug, not lumped in with heroin, acid, other drugs, very harmful drugs. So that's one big thing that could be coming within the next month, approval. We don't know, but that's speculation. Yeah. Two, there's also the Safer Banking Act still out there, which would allow access to cannabis companies, access to banks, which would be huge for the industry. That also could get approved. It's starting to gain momentum a little bit again, as Michael wrote the other day. And then Germany just legalized it. Certain states are moving more towards legalization here in the U.S. There's real momentum, and now we're seeing that in the stock price. The bottom, as I said, in MJ was just below $3 in August. It's now at $4.28 year to date. It's up 35% marijuana cannabis stocks, at least according to MJ. It seems like the floor, at the very least, has been raised. Not to say, you know, most of the gains I just referenced year to date have come in the last 2 weeks. It was basically flat until the last 2 weeks. So usually the pattern has been, we mentioned this, and cannabis stocks go tumbling backward. And that may happen again. But I do think at the very least a floor has been put in, and investors are just waiting for that one of those big catalysts, probably rescheduling, to arrive. And it could be sent to, you know, a whole different stratosphere, you know, closer to what we saw 2-3 years ago.
Yeah, you say it's up 34% year to date. It's up 24% in the last month. And like you said, most of that coming in the last 2 weeks following Kamala Harris's conversation with Fat Joe, I think was the catalyst that is widely
Fat
being
Joe
pointed
is the
at.
Biggest catalyst for stocks. Yep.
I will say that might be the most impactful thing she has done in the course of the administration. Not exactly high profile VP.
No, you said it.
Yeah. Yeah, so driving cannabis stocks up 24% is going to be her legacy. Anyway, so that, politics aside, it's a sector where people have been burned a lot over the last few years. Because, you know, even looking at the numbers that you were quoting, looking back to like 2021, if you go back even further, I think MJ was 34, 40 a share back in like 20, I'll pull up a chart.
Yeah.
Back in 2019, it was trading at 36 a share.
Yep.
And it ground lower into the pandemic. It got a little bit of a pop with the bull market. I mean, could this be just a sector that is only going to, is this going to become like the new bull market stock sector? I don't know. I mean, the catalysts are real. We've talked about the cultural
trend. Real product that.
Yeah.
Is becoming more and more available, not only here, but globally. And yet it looks like MJ peaked at 40 in 2018. So it's trading at like exactly a tenth of its peak price from almost 6 years ago. I don't consider this sector a meme sector, there's a real product here with a real, real growth happening.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see the growth come in fits and starts. When the Canadian markets legalized, they, you know, they're publicly traded companies, similarly ran up, and then they ran into oversupply problems, which led to price compression and a ton of competition, but not a lot of profitability. I think our domestic cannabis companies are probably going through that now, right? Maybe that clears the road ahead a little bit for them, where they can, where they're not going to need the, because it's happening on the state level, it's not like they're going to have one major catalyst of legalization and then they figure out the business. This is incremental legalization while they figure out the business, then prospectively leading to nationwide legalization. You know, even just from a price and value standpoint, I think you're, even if you're getting burned, you're not going to get burned too badly. The one thing that I clocked, having been a investor in this company a number of years ago, was canopy growth, which, you know, that was a very popular one in the 2021 era. And then, well, I was trading at 600 a share, 500 a share back in 2019, trading at 952 right now. That was into like sub $1 at some point.
Yeah.
They had indicated that they were like divesting themselves of cannabis and they were no longer going to have direct exposure. They may have gone through a reverse split. I haven't looked further into that. They're trading at 958 right now. They're at, you know, they're up 100% year to date. So I think you'll probably see some names in here that are overreacting to it. But like you said, it's an actual business that delivers product that people like, that especially younger generations are more keen to use versus what we've talked about with like alcohol consumption and things like that. So it definitely a real product. I think it's a reasonable flyer to take. You probably don't want to put all your eggs in the legalization is going to happen by X date basket.
Right.
But maybe scale up your exposure or add some if you don't have any.
I'd be shocked if the sector, with given all the catalysts, is not higher by year's end. Month from now, especially depending on when that first catalyst comes, could be down 20%, could be up 20%, who knows? Especially now that we've said this, now that every time we have a segment of this, I'm almost guaranteed it'll be down in the next week or two. But over the next, you know, 6, 9 months, a year further, I'm very bullish on cannabis stocks.
Before we transition, the one thing I do want to call out, there may be political risk to it, right, with the November election. If we don't hit that April date, which has been what's been floated for everything to get lined up to be legalized before the November election, if we don't hit that April date, maybe there's more political risk to that. So that is something to keep in mind. But I think broadly, the sentiment trends and the consumer trends probably even override the politics of it all, but who knows?
Yeah. Okay, let's get to Mike Santolo after a quick break. All right, we welcome on Mike Santolo, who is Cabot's chief investment strategist and chief analyst of our Cabot Growth Investor, Cabot Top 10 Trader Advisories. Mike, we always seem to have you on when the market is at all-time highs, to mixed results after.
Right.
But you've been pretty consistent that you think, you know, the market isn't, we've talked many times about how bull markets don't die of old age. You know, now it's been, as we talked about earlier on this podcast, 5 straight months, S&P, you know, the 30th winning streak of 5 months and since 1950 for the S&P. And generally that's a bullish sign. Ryan Detrick of Carson Research Group gave up a number that 12 months later, the average gain is 12.5% after such streaks versus a 9% gain on average otherwise. Where do you stand on the market going forward? What are sort of, I know you don't like to predict, but what are just the indicators you're seeing, what are they telling you?
Well, my indicators are trend following. I mean, I think big picture, my biggest conviction, we talked about this in the whatever it was, the Prime Plus thing earlier this week. Biggest conviction is the big picture. I mean, you know, the Fed could screw us or some war could get out of control. There's always that possibility. But, you know, we had 2 or 2.5 basically down years. I mean, I'm not saying they were all straight down for everything. I know NVIDIA and all that stuff. But for the most part, the broad market, growth stocks, glamour stocks that I follow, were on their knees as of late October. So the bear market probably ended in 2022, but the bull market started in whatever, you know, Halloween, call it, last year. And so, yeah, I think we're 5 months into that phase. And yeah, whether it's, I mean, Detrick's got great numbers. I follow him on Twitter or X or whatever they call it.
Yeah.
And, but you know, whether it's blast off indicators from last year or unusual strength or whatever, you know, the odds favor, you know, I don't know, looking in the months ahead, whatever that means, we're going to be nicely higher. And I think a lot of the leaders, you know, can generally continue to lead. They're not all going to just kite higher forever, but I definitely think the institutional quality names with good stories and sponsorship and all that stuff we like to look for, you know, should do well. So it's kind of the payoff for 2.5 years of grinding it out, honestly, holding a lot of cash and, you know, trends that were abruptly, you know, ended after 4 weeks, that sort of thing.
Yeah. I never heard it quite phrased that way, but you're totally right that the bear market ended at the end of 2022. And while technically it hit bull market status, new bull market status, because it was up 20% from the low by what, like last spring, right, it never was really a bull market because of just, you know, how much it was carried by the Magnificent Seven, and, you know, maybe a few other stocks until the last 5 months, really, right?
Yeah, until the Fed called off the dogs, really, or the market.
Yeah, that's true.
The market anticipated the Fed calling off the dogs.
Right.
That was really it. Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, no, I mean, chip stocks doesn't mean nothing went up. You know, I'm not trying to make it sound like 2023 was a horror show, but...
Yeah, AI too.
Yeah. But it was, I think there was... All I can say is I screen stuff every week, top 10 trader or whatever. And I mean, there's a ton of stuff that was basically on its knees as of late October. You know what I mean? Even if it had a spring rally. So yeah, but that's in the past. So looking forward, I think, you know, more and more people, I know short-term sentiment is elevated, I think, but you know, the average person isn't super excited about the stock market or think that the economy is printing everybody money. It's kind of the opposite right now. So I think there's, you know, the sentiment pendulum has further to swing for sure.
One thing that I'm curious, I mentioned to Chris earlier in the podcast that Detrick had an X twit, whatever the new phraseology is, that the market was
easier just to stick with tweets, I think.
So. Yeah.
It was what, higher 17 of the last 21 weeks, had risen 21% and or 27% in that time, and it had never happened. What's your mindset when you see these? Is that too much like the baseball, or you know, too much like a sports stat where it's like, all right, well, you know, in the ALCS with three men on, nobody has ever, like, it, does it get too much into that or does that?
Yeah. During day games. Right. Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
You can slice it kind of thin. I think I actually like that study. Yes. Most of the studies that come out, not him, but just everybody on Twitter or whatever, it is slicing it pretty thin, or some subsector of the market, seasonality. You know, I don't pay attention to that personally. But I think that was interesting because one of the ways, when you go back and look, it has a lot of, what we're seeing has a lot of similarities to like 1975, 1982, 1991, 2009, 2020, you know, some of these blast offs that went on for a while. Now, some went on for a year, some went on for 4 years, some, you know, but they didn't go on for 5 months and then collapse 25% or something like that. So it depends. I think there's a lot of them that you can always screen something and find and massage the data. But something like that just says, hey, the market's up a lot over this period of time. When has it done that in the past? And it turns out it's almost always at the start of new bull markets. You know, it's just one factor, but I think it's worth knowing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So the other thing that you have talked about a lot, or at least written about a lot, is we're seeing some of the rotation out of the early leaders. Are there any sectors in particular that you're looking at?
Yeah, I was just screening for top 10 actually before I came on here for this, you know, it's because we got the day off tomorrow, which means I'll just be working half the day on my own. But so for Monday, but it's a lot of old world stuff. So, I mean, it's hard to, I don't think of it in sectors, but I mean, I guess some commodities, but it's just a lot of like, you know, filtration systems and obviously building, you know, building, construction, housing is still strong, but it's a lot of stuff where like, if you drop their product on your foot, it would hurt sort of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
just kind of like old world. And frankly, a lot of those, honestly, like are kind of extended. So it's getting a little harder to find things that are good entries right here, which isn't totally surprising just because we've been up for 5 months, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that, I am seeing rotation and just small caps and stuff. Clearly IWM and stuff is picking up some steam. We'll see if it, you know, finally gets going this time compared to, you know, AI and stuff like that.
We were talking earlier about just signs of frothiness, if there are any, you know, Reddit's IPO. We sort of dismissed that, you know, one could term, they can get lumped in with the meme stocks because that's where meme stocks were born, you know, and then, you know, like Truth Social and some other plays, you know, coming online here. But I don't see, other than, you know, I guess Bitcoin being at all-time highs again, which it tends to do every couple of years, I don't see a ton of frothiness out there now, do you?
Yeah, it depends how you define it. I mean, I think there was some in February. I think since early February, we've seen churning in some of these leaders. So you had like Arm Holdings, which is a great company. And that's a real company. I'm not trying to make that out to be a meme stock at all. But the stock's up like 100% on its earnings report in 2 or 3 days. It's like, all right, you know, like, so there was definitely some of that. But no, big picture, just because you have a hot IPO, no, that's, I don't know. I started here when like 99 and nothing's ever, 2020 came somewhat close, but 99 was like, you know, so when I see like one or two hot IPOs, to me, that says it's a bull market. You know, if I saw, you know, 10 of those in 2 weeks after the market's up for 15, you know, we're on this podcast next, you know, April or whatever, March.
Yeah.
And we're seeing that, then it's kind of like, ooh, that's a little bit too easy. But right now I don't, short term, a little froth, stuff like that, but I don't see anything big. Yeah.
Yeah, I think, as you mentioned, like the rotation into, you know, real world or old world products and the sort of the pause in the AI, you know, bullishness over the last few weeks has been, to my mind, has been sort of encouraging. It almost seems like this is a pause before the next leg up in the rally, which, you know, could be led by totally different stocks than what led the charge in the, you know, from November through January.
Well, I kind of want my stocks to go up, Chris. So if we could work on that, but well, no, I tend to agree. I mean, up is good. So, I mean, yes, I think it's better to rotate, you know, obviously than to have the market, to have everything falls 5 or 6%. I would say though, that a bull market characteristic is when you do get the super sharp, sharp short shakeouts in stocks and the market, which keeps the fear level up. It's a little, I'm not, like you said, I don't want to predict anything. I'm just kind of following it. But I remember in early 2004, so I was still kind of like behind the years. So this is after the bear market, 2003, great year. And all our indicators are positive. It was early 2004, and Carlton, who's the founder of Cabot, he just goes, yeah, I'm a little apprehensive. I was like, why? You know, it's like, you know, tides are positive, 2 second, and everything's positive. And he goes, well, we're just not really going anywhere. And so for the tech stuff, it's one of those things where the sellers certainly aren't in control, but they have been kind of, you know, selling on strength for many weeks. And it's a little, you know, not too easy, but, you know, so this is all just my own stuff that I think about, you know, it's not something I really trade off of directly. So I do wonder if we're kind of ready for even a short-term kind of fear, something comes on the scene and it's like, whoa, and we kind of get the fear level back up a little bit short-term. But overall, yes, I agree with you that it's better than, you know, AI sells off and everything else breaks its 50-day line and small caps are in the toilet. No, it's better to rotate. And that's kind of the lifeblood of the bull market over time.
Is there a specific indicator that you're looking for that would turn you short-term bearish? Or would you, you know, you talk about a short-term shakeout or something like that. Is there something that's going to maybe trigger you to start selling across maybe a type of story? So not sector so much, but like, all right, well, AI tech or cloud software or whatever, is there something specific that you're looking for, or is it just technical breakdown?
It's, well, yeah, but those are indicators. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think so too. I think so, the leaders, yeah. So the big liquid leaders in the tech space and stuff. So if you started to see those really act, what I would say, intermediate term abnormal, not like, you know, it has to gap down 30% in earnings, but, you know, breaking 50-day lines, volume and stuff like that. I would say a regression index. I've been watching that. It keeps coming down to kind of a similar level. It's just basically the NASDAQ versus consumer staples. So it's just offense versus defense, basically. And so it's kind of still within its overall uptrend, although it's, again, been kind of stalling out here for a couple months. So I think if that really changed character, which would probably coincide with the NASDAQ falling, of course, that would probably be a sign that, you know, we're in some sort of correction or whatever. Overall, though, I mean, I do, just to say, I do view this as sort of the first leg of the market. You never know, but, you know, there's usually not just one leg. So so if we do get a correction, not that I'm rooting for it or not that it's going to be painless, it won't be. But, you know, my guess is obviously the odds strongly favor after that, there'll be at least one more leg, nice leg higher, if not, you know, two or three more.
So likely to have you sort of pulling in lines instead of going to cash.
Well, I would sell, but it wouldn't be like, I wouldn't be going to the beach for a few days. You know what I mean? I'd be keeping an eye on things and making sure. I mean, I'm always making sure the watch list up to date, but definitely like keeping an eye on things like, okay, this broke the 50 day, but then, oh, wow, next week it snapped right back. Like that might've been just a shakeout. Let's start a position sort of thing. So now just kind of mentally leaning positive. That's all.
Last question before we let you go. Big sports day, MLB opening day, NCAA tournament starts up again. But so let me ask you one thing that's on your mind, I'm sure. Who are the Patriots taking in the, when is the draft? End of this? Or no, it's in April, right? Are they 25th. Number three?
Yeah.
Who do you want them to take and who do you think they will take?
Well, believe it or not, which I'm definitely in the minority, but I would love for them to trade down if they got a great deal. I mean, you know, somebody gave them a lot of picks and then pick a quarterback. They need a quarterback, but pick one either late first, early second. I don't see a huge difference between, I mean, like Drake May and like Michael Penix. Like, I guess Drake May is a better prospect, but I'm kind of like, is it that much better? You know, so, but what I think they're going to do is I just think the lowest, if you're a new GM, Bill Belichick got canned, obviously, and the owner, which by the way, the GM, not to turn this into sports Patriots talk, but the GM actually doesn't have a contract yet. I mean, he's almost surely going to stay on, but just for your own self, you know, like preservation, the easiest thing to do is to take, you know, a quarterback that everyone expects you to take. And then if he stinks, well, it's a quarterback's fault. It's a coach's fault. So, but I think, and they're good prospects. So I think they'll probably take a quarterback, which is fine. I'm all for it. But I would almost kind of rather see them trade down or whatever. So we'll see. It'll be fun, but it's still like a month away. It's like,
yeah, it feels that it gets talked about so early that you feel like it's, well, this is happening any day, right? Like, nope.
It's like another month of just ridiculous mock drafts and stupid
rumors
and all this stuff. But like JJ McCarthy, where the hell did that come from?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It feels like he's going to be like the number one pick now.
I know. That will talk
This is one of the very few podcasts you could join where you have someone on it whose team is drafted before you. With, I think, the Cardinals have the number one pick, Brent, or two? Two.
No, they're number four.
Oh, they're Thank four? You.
Yeah, no.
Oh, Patriots, I'm wrong. Patriots, I Patriots,
we tanked better than they did this year. It was great.
Wow. That's, I don't know. Yeah. I'm surprised.
Until I get evidence to the contrary, as I understand it, the Arizona Cardinals are not going to be fielding a football team this season. So,
yeah, it just feels like they're worse than the Patriots, but hear anything about them.
They had their moments, but then I've also seen rumors that Kyler is going to get shopped around. I don't know who would want him. Barely want him.
Yeah, I heard they might trade down because if they're in with Kyler and they draft Marvin Harrison or whatever, you know, one of these guys, but. Who knows? It's fun. It's good theater. And then, you know, it all goes away and it matters what they do on the field. So, but I'll probably have a couple of my son's into it. So I'll have a couple of his buddies over for a couple hours that night and get some pizza and make the most of it. So
nice. Yeah. Well, something to look forward to. Hopefully stocks, whenever the draft finally arrives, hopefully stocks are higher by then. It's somewhere between a month from now and 3 months from now. I don't know. But Mike, thanks for joining us. And we will be back with another episode of Street Check at our regular day next Friday. Enjoy the long weekend for those of you involved in the market. And we'll see you next time.